Resurrected Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast, on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Resurrected Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast. I'm your host, Tom Lacovara Stewart, and today's topic is going to be kind of geared towards the NSA. The Electronic Frontier Foundation and 23 civil liberties organizations have demanded transparency on NSA domestic phone record surveillance. This is just one of the many aspects of the NSA that you're going to hear about today. The NSA has been found to be in violation of the rights of the people. They've been, in fact, they've been found to have violated the law, but there is no accountability. There is no anyone who has ever brought to task for any of these crimes. Had it been you or I, of course, we would be in prison, and the purpose for which we were purported that the government was created was to preserve and protect our rights. They were restrained by the chains of the Constitution, but they have broken those chains for a very long time. And we are in very much a nation in distress because of this. There's no accountability. We've seen from, and I've said this, you know, the past few days you've heard me talk about the Secret Service and the FBI and all of these agencies that seemingly have no accountability. They have no real way of removing these people. Short of them committing murder or something. And then on top of that, you have the Secret Executive Service, which is something that American intelligence media covers very well, and we probably should cover it more. I mean, once you talk about it, you feel like, oh, you've told everybody about it. But we got to stay on these subjects. We can't just let them bypass us. So this week, 24 civil liberties organizations, including the EFF and the ACLU, urged Director of National Intelligence Daniel Coats to report as required by law statistics that would help clear up just how many individuals are being burdened by the broad NSA surveillance and domestic telephone records. These records show who is calling whom and when, but not the content of the calls. These numbers are crucial to understanding how the NSA conducts this highly sensitive surveillance under Section 215 of the Patriot Act, which is also unconstitutional in and of itself, as amended by the USA Freedom Act of 2015. I love how they call it the Patriot Act, the Freedom Act. A real Freedom Act would be cutting the size of the federal government by three quarters at least. That would be the Freedom Act. Under the earlier version of this surveillance program, the NSA collected details of nearly every single American's phone calls. With the NSA's domestic phone record surveillance power scheduled to expire in 2019, Congress and the public deserve to know the truth before any legislative attempts to reauthorize any program or to essentially create protections for laws that have already been broken as if they were not laws that have already been broken. Despite this, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, has failed to report these statistics in its past three annual transparency reports. So the very act that was put into place to prevent any more unlawful spying on American citizens has been ignored, and of course, as usual, with no consequence. The civil liberties groups also signed a letter to Representatives Bod Goodlatte, Republican from Virginia, and Jerry Nadler, Democrat from New York, the chair and ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, warning about the NSA's continued failure to comply with the law mandating the disclosure of this data. For more than a decade, the NSA relied on faulty interpretation of Section 215 to collect the time, duration, and numbers called for nearly every single American's phone calls. But a federal appeals court in New York in 2015 ruled that this collection was illegal, calling it unprecedented and unwarranted. Okay, so here you have a court saying that their actions were illegal. Who went to jail? No one. Soon after Congress passed the USA Freedom Act, while it did not go far enough, the bill included several transparency provisions to prevent future surveillance abuse by the NSA. For example, the bill included the requirement that the NSA annually report the accurate number of unique identifiers, things like accounts, persons, or devices that the NSA uses when conducting surveillance under Section 215. The EFF told Director Coats in their letter, This data point is critical to measure the number of individuals impacted by the program and the extent to which the USA Freedom Act has successfully prevented bulk collection under this authority. Importantly, the number can also serve as a warning sign in the event the NSA attempts to resurrect unlawful surveillance practices under Section 215. So, concerningly, Section 215 collection has risen dramatically since the bill's passage. According to the most recent transparency report from the ODNI, the NSA collected more than 530 million call records in 2017, an increase more than 300% from the year prior. However, lacking accurate statistics on unique identifiers, these numbers are difficult to even interpret. Before Congress introduces legislation to extend Section 215 beyond its expiration date in 2019, the public needs to know how that extension may affect them. Codes to retroactively report the number of unique identifiers in his office's transparency report for the past 3 years. They also asked for a meeting with Director Coates where he can explain the recent surge in call records collected under Section 215. The public absolutely deserves the truth. The truth is essential for the public to understand what's really going on here. So what I'm going to be sharing with you today, I could not do this interview any better than this was already done. It is an interview with NSA whistleblower William Binney. A 36-year veteran of America's intelligence community, William Binney resigned from his position as Director for Global Communications Intelligence at the National Security Agency and blew the whistle. After discovering that his efforts to protect the privacy and security of Americans were being undermined by those above him in the chain of command, the NSA data monitoring program, which Binney and his team developed, codenamed Thin Thread, was being armed not as foreign targets as intended, but at Americans, codenamed as Stellar Wind, destroying privacy here and around the world. Binney voices his call to action for the billions of individuals whose rights are currently being violated. William Binney speaks out in this incredible interview with Tragedy and Hope's Richard Grove, focused on the topic of an ever-growing surveillance state in America. Dan, if you could, please roll the clip. NSA whistleblower William Binney.
Well, that goes back to Caesar Augustus, I would say. You know, anybody that opposed him, you needed to know about it, first of all, and once that happened, they would disappear. Well, the same was true in the Soviet Union or East Germany with the Stasi. If you said anything out of line, you ended up in jail. I mean, or in a sanitarium or something, or in a gulag somewhere. That same was true of the Nazis and the Gestapo and SS. They would do the same to people. Now, this is historically true. This is the way totalitarian states operate, and this is gathering knowledge about people and the entire population is a totalitarian procedure. That was the first thing that hit me right away. This was obvious, the route we were taking. And so that's why I've been opposing it since they started it in 2001. A real threat, the only threat we really faced were really domestically. We have done to ourselves fundamentally what the terrorists wanted done but could never achieve, we have done to ourselves. And this is the domestic threat that our constitutional and the oath of office that we took was given to prevent. I mean, this is the only way no other country in the world could have done to us what we have done to ourselves. And so this is the time when all good Americans need to stand up and oppose this. You have to be aware that these agencies are threatening what is fundamental to human rights everywhere. And you've got to ensure that you have some way of verifying and keeping these agencies in line.
This is the part we're going to do some sound bites. So I have a question for you, such as encryption. Is it safe?
The short answer is no. Virtually everything is suspect now because of the program Bull Run, which is the NSA program to weaken crypt systems, not counting putting in back doors. This is how you weaken a crypt system so you can break it. So, and you don't know how many they've done that to, although it appears from what's been released by Snowden that they have been quite successful at it. There's really a kicker there on that program that no one has really taken up. When you weaken firewalls and weaken operating systems and weaken crypt systems, you open up everybody to hackers around the world. And so therefore they hack into all kinds of things, getting all your data and everything. So you're not really protecting your communications, you're weakening it. It's a very short-sighted, finite thinking that they had when they did that. Also, one side of NSA, you know, is data protection, right? And the other is operations for getting into other people's data, so they're working against each other.
So by trying to keep yourself safe in the technotronic era, we're actually drawing red flags and creating attention for ourselves from people who might want to break that encryption or already have the keys to break that encryption.
Well, and exposing it to other, I mean, after all, NSA doesn't have a monopoly on smart people. I mean, other agencies around the world have smart people also. If there's a weakness in a crypt system, other people can find it too. Or if there's a weakness in a firewall or an operating system, other people can find that too. And that's how they can break into things.
What is privacy and why is it our right as individuals to have it?
The principal thing about privacy came out of the Revolutionary War when the British broke into U.S. Houses of U.S. People and they would go anywhere and do anything they wanted with a general writ, which meant that we here in the United States had no privacy whatsoever as a colony of the government at the time, the British government. So that was kind of the impetus to create the Fourth Amendment that said you, before you could do that, you had to have evidence that would show probable cause that someone in this country was doing something illegal or preparing a violent action or something. They would have some probable cause to show to a judge with the name of the person, the reason you're doing it, where you're going to have the warrant served and where you're going to search and what you're searching for. That's all in the Fourth Amendment, and that's why it was written that way. It was because the U.S. government, the central government, was never intended to have information on all the citizens of the United States. In order to get that, they were supposed to have a warrant. Didn't matter how they claimed they could get it, like third-party doctrine or any of that. That intent was in the Constitution from the very beginning. They were not supposed to have it unless they had a warrant with probable cause.
So if privacy is our protection to keep our hard work from being plundered, can you compare that idea to that of Soviet Russia or the Stasi in East Germany?
Yeah, directly, simply because those are the targets that I was working in NSA while I was there for almost 30 years. And it was their entire point was they had to know everything about their population they possibly could, so they could control it. I mean, that's what the Stasi did. That's what the KGB and the MVD, Ministry of Internal Affairs in the Soviet Union did. So they kept track of everybody as best they could, and except they were doing it all manually, keeping manual files and things like that. They didn't have they didn't have anywhere near the capacity we do now with the electronic age and the digital age and the software and the programs and the access that NSA does. So it's directly analogous, except it's in electronic form, not in paper form.
So it's not exactly history repeating, but it certainly rhymes, and now they have more technological power to carry out what they're trying to do.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
How's an average individual adversely affected by NSA surveillance?
Actually, it's hard to say there's any impact, immediate impact on the individual per se, not yet anyway. Unless you become a target or try to get politically active and are espousing principles or other directions or advocating for other kinds of operations that for the government that the current administration doesn't like, in which case you can become a target. Like the Tea Party and the IRS, how they're using this data to go after the Tea Party. It's how you use information about people. It's power over people. If you don't like what someone's doing, you use that data against them.
Have they gone outside the limits of the Constitution?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was my complaint from the very beginning when they started this. domestic spying in 2001, the most recent iteration of domestic spying, I would add. This goes back to at least World War II with Program Shamrock, and after that,
Minaret.
Well, that was during the Nixon times when he was after the anti-war protesters.
That's
and
right.
Other people didn't agree with his administration's position. He got the FBI using COINTELPRO, the CIA with a program called CHAOS, and NSA with Minaret. Those were programs all oriented against these people that the administration didn't particularly care for, opposing the war and so on. And they were the ones then collecting the data for the administration and, doing things like in COINTELPRO, trying to get people to commit suicide or manipulate people in different ways using the information that was collected from Minaret, CHAOS, or COINTELPRO.
What happens when we have regulation without representation?
You have basically what's going on in that case is you have an uninformed electorate being duped by a current government and being told lies and repeated lies till they get believed. I mean, that was the general principle of Adolf Hitler. If you're going to tell a lie, make it a big one. Tell it often until it's believed. That's the principle they're using, repetition. Like, it's all legal, it's all legal, it's all legal, except in the case of when they had to give retroactive immunity to the telecoms, or except now in the case where they have a bill in Congress that's giving retroactive immunity to the Internet service providers. Why? Because they've been committing crimes. And they're liable if the Department of Justice is not going to take them on in criminal court, which they're not. Others have the option to sue them in civil court, and that's why they had to give them the retroactive immunity.
What actions are people taking today that are, with respect to technology, kind of naive in the current environment?
One of the biggest ones is Facebook. I mean, people are putting their whole lives out there on Facebook. They don't realize that that's being captured. The FBI, for example, looks at Facebook as one of the richest environments for them to investigate. So, but it's also being stored and captured by and used by different agencies. Like NSA is pulling that data in, as well as corporations. They're also using this data. So, I mean, it's the kind of thing they're trying. Corporations are more trying to sell you something. It's more of a marketing kind of approach, where they're trying to figure out what you like or the kinds of things they should send or push advertisements to you. Whereas the FBI is looking at it for ways and means to, if you're being targeted, ways and means to either arrest you or take you out or put you in, like they did with the CEO of Quest, Nacho. They put him in jail, like they tried to do with Tom Drake and like they tried to do with us. Try to use that information to build a circumstantial case and basically fabricate evidence, which they did in our case. So the difference between government, which is more malicious than industry, is they're really still doing the same kind of thing. They're invading the privacy of everybody, and people are actually helping them by putting all this information out there, either in Twitter or in Facebook or any number of other ways, like an email, for example. That all that kind of information is being collected, and it's being used against them.
So there's a tight relationship between the corporations that are spying on us to collect our private data and the intelligence communities that are also scanning for metadata or stealing it out of Angry Birds, as I heard Mike Hayden once say. You know, he's like, Angry Birds is already stealing your data. We're just sniffing their stream as it goes to Angry Birds Central, I think was his quote.
And they also, the program they're using to do that kind of sniffing is, the primary program is Fairview. That one has between 80 and 100 taps on the fiber optic network inside the continental U.S. It's on the web. You can go take a look at the different fiber optic tap points, but that's how they're acquiring the information as it's passing by on the fiber network. That was.
Be right back, folks. Resurrect the Republic.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
Hey, folks.
CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read a few from Amazon.com. Dr. Sam Serino reviewed the Extendivite product. Good ingredients, feeling much better since taking product. It seems that the tablets work well. Once again, thank you for your product. My acid reflux is really improved thanks to the Extendivite. Together with my thumb joints, the pain is gone and I'm able to grip things much better. My friend has peripheral arterial disorder, and their lower legs were hurting at a red color, but thankfully, there has been a significant improvement. Kind regards, Janice. My husband feels a big difference using Extendivite. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
It was also mentioned along with other programs as the upstream program in the PRISM slide that was released by Edward Snowden. Also, it was the first one. Fairview, Stormbrew, Blarney, and Oakstar were the ones that they listed. Fairview, the first three, I think, were all U.S. corporations. The Oakstar is foreign corporations. So that, and those were, there are about eight of them, I guess, according to the data that's been published. Poland was one of them, some Polish telecommunications company, but I don't. The others haven't been released by the Snowden in the Snowden material anyway. But they're foreign companies, so it's a mixture of U.S. and foreign companies around the world, along with foreign governments. And if they don't get cooperation either from the companies or the governments, they'll unilaterally do it. So they have a massive tap network on the entire internet and the fiber optic public switch telephone network. So that's a huge data acquisition system.
How necessary is it to the collection of intelligence that you map out the social networks of your targets?
If you're focused on targets, that is groups of individuals doing something illegal or criminal or some terrorist group, that's a legitimate operation of intelligence. Try to figure out potential adversaries or potential threats. That's legitimate. Every country in the world would say that's what they do or want to do too, within the means and capabilities they have. But when you start mapping out the social networks of everybody on the planet, that's a totally different issue. Now you're getting into the privacy of everyone that is not even a threat. So you're accumulating information on everybody in the world and all of their activities, everything they do. And it basically gets down to the ability, even after you accumulate that, you can look at their profiles and begin to see how they think and what they're thinking about issues. And you can even begin to project how they will act or react to situations. Although right now they're not very good at that. There is a capability to do that, and we have been able to successfully do that in the past. They're attempting, at least, that's one of the initiatives that the White House list let, I think in early 2012, they let a big White House Big Data Initiative, which was a solicitation from industry to work out algorithms that would go into large data sets to figure out what's important for people to look at. That's how you automate the process of analyzing all of this data to boil that down to what's really important, which they should have been doing in the beginning and it could have done right at the beginning, which is what we did in our program, Thin Thread, which would pull out only that data that was relevant to groups or individuals intending to do something criminal or terrorist-type activities around the world, or other governments or leaders and so on. All those were legitimate intelligence targets, foreign intelligence targets. They could have done that right from the beginning instead of having this knowledge about everybody. What that's done is give them an entire rich database for other agencies of the government, like the FBI and the DEA and the Department of Homeland Security and the IRS, to go in and examine everybody in the country and everybody virtually on the planet that's using internet or phone networks.
So they're spying on everybody, collecting metadata, they're building profiles out of it. What is the reasoning behind pointing such an apparatus at the American public? And what type of money, combined budgets of these type of projects focused on the American people, what are we looking at?
The reason that I came up with that they were doing that is primarily for money and building an empire. The reason I say that is because if you take the position of collecting only targeted information against groups doing bad things, then you have a finite problem. So you don't have to have large storage facilities like Bluffdale in Utah or another 400,000 square foot facility in San Antonio, Texas, or another one they just started building last summer on Fort Meade in Maryland, 600,000 square foot facility to store information. You wouldn't need any of that. Plus, you wouldn't need all the contracts for contractors, and you wouldn't need to have a larger workforce. But you would be focused on a rich environment of information, which actually would mean you would succeed at preventing terrorism and preventing crime, international crime, and so on. But by taking in the bulk acquisition, that means you're taking in everything in the world. That means you're pulling in all kinds of huge amounts of information, hundreds of terabytes per day, you know, going around the network. That becomes a management problem of information to begin with. How you have to build an infrastructure to transport it to storage facilities. You have to build the storage facilities. You have to have contracts for all this to happen and contracts to manage all the data once you've captured it, and then contracts to build other kinds of programs to manipulate the data and use it for analysts and so on, and then hire more analysts to analyze data because there's orders of magnitude more data to look at. So, and it builds your budget so much bigger, and so now you're managing a much larger empire. So they did it, in my sense, for empire.
Well, they told us they were doing it for the prevention of terrorism, so that would mean none of these programs were underway pre-9/11, right?
Well, there was clearly an intent to do it prior to 9/11, and certainly there was down through history with Program Minaret at NSA anyway, and Shamrock. Those programs, they were doing that all the way back to World War II. Those are the programs that came out with the Church Committee investigation into NSA, FBI, and CIA back in the mid-70s. And as part of that, that's when the FISA law was written, and that's when the intelligence committees were created, the Senate and House Intelligence Committees, and the FISA Court. They were all created to have oversight of the intelligence community to ensure that they did not do domestic spying. So that oversight was supposed to prevent this type of domestic spying. Instead, now they're all advocates for it. The courts, the intelligence committees, they're all advocating for NSA to do this kind of thing, all under the false pretense that it's going to prevent terrorism. Well, what it's done is made their...
Can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed, and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Sure that they did not do domestic spying. So that oversight was supposed to prevent this type of domestic spying. Instead, now they're all advocates for it. The courts, the intelligence committees, they're all advocating for NSA to do this kind of thing, all under the false pretense that it's going to prevent terrorism. Well, what it's done is made their what it's done fundamentally is add orders of magnitude more data for their analysts to look at every day. And they can't get through that data, and so they're dysfunctional, and so we don't stop things like the Boston bomber, the Fort Hood shooter, the Times Square bomber, the underwear bomber, people who are trying to do things that they should have been stopped. Even 9/11 should have been stopped, but even with the data that we had, but it wasn't. That's because their analysts are dysfunctional. They can't function under the environment they've created for them.
Well, they're incentivized to keep filling up their budgets and expending their budgets so they can keep growing their budgets and grow power. But what occurs to me is there's a historical relationship between mass surveillance on a population and the crushing of dissent of that population. Can you explain that?
Well, that goes back to Caesar Augustus, I would say. You know, anybody that opposed him, you needed to know about it, first of all, and once that happened, they would disappear. Well, the same was true in the Soviet Union or East Germany with the Stasi. If you said anything out of line, you ended up in jail. I mean, or in a sanitarium or something, or in a gulag somewhere. That same was true of the Nazis and the Gestapo and SS. They would do the same to people. Now, this is historically true. This is the way totalitarian states operate. And this is gathering knowledge about people and the entire population is a totalitarian procedure. That was the first thing that hit me right away. This was obvious, the route we were taking. And so that's why I've been opposing it since they started it in 2001.
How would you describe a panopticon?
I'm not really good at doing it, that kind of thing.
Do you know what it is?
It's not clear to me.
Okay. I'll just explain. You don't have to address it at all, but just so we're on the same page. East India Company employed this guy named Jeremy Bentham, and Bentham was asked to create a metaphorical prison that they ended up trying to build in Russia later. But it's the guard towers had mirrors on it, and so it could see all the prisoners at the same time. So the prisoners always think that they're being watched, but they can never see if there's somebody in the guard tower pointing a gun at them. They just know that sometimes people get shot from the guard tower. And it's a state of living in fear and using fear to control people's actions as...
Well, I mean, yeah. Okay, that's the state we're in. I mean, fear-mongering is the way our government's been operating. Fear-mongering first for terrorism to build up the budget. And now that's, they've been playing that card too many times. Now they're looking at cybersecurity as the next fear. And then they'll find something else later on. And they never really want to solve the problem. That's been the basic issue with it, because once you solve the problem, you don't have the problem to have justification to get more money. My version of their vision statement came out like this, that for them, it's keep the problem going so the money keeps flowing. I mean, otherwise, if you solve the problem, you don't have that problem to justify more money and more of an empire and to sustain your empire. So that's really what they're operating. Originally, I thought it was, aim low and miss was their vision statement, because everything they ever did, they failed at. I didn't quite understand it till the latter part of my career, that they were really not solving the problem because they didn't want to. It was a matter of keeping it going so they can get the next contract or get the next set of budget from the Congress and so on. Keep it going.
And when left in the dark, they've been pointing those budgets at us. They've been using targeting Americans. And we can talk about the potentials of kill lists and things like that that are floating around in our world these days. But they're pointing this technology, it's coming from taxpayer money, back at the taxpayers, which seems very, much like, East Germany or Soviet Union.
Well, you have to look at it also, in order to do the bulk acquisition of data, the largest amount of data is being passed around inside the United States, other than around the world. I mean, the pockets where information is really ballooning are in the United States, in Europe, and in Japan, and in Korea, South Korea, and so on. Those are the big areas. In fact, 80% of the fiber optic network for transporting the communications of the world really is within the United States or passing through the United States. This is really what they call the hometown advantage. Being able to have being able to monitor the communications, for example, of South Americans, because the South American cables run from South America to Miami and then back down to South America. That's not by chance, by the way. That gives us a look into everything that's going down there, on down there, and they can then capture all that information from places inside the United States. They don't have to be overseas to do it. That's true for about 80% of it, but, The other 20% is where they have to. That's really the target they should be looking at, really, not the internal United States. But they decided that with bulk acquisition of data, U.S. citizens were first. We're the first ones collected that way. So the rest of the world is no more than being treated simply just like all the rest of us, all of us U.S. citizens. So we're all being treated the same.
Recently, I saw a headline come out of the London Guardian, I believe it was, where you said that the reason the NSA was surveilling its own population was for totalitarian population control. Can you say that again in your own words?
Again, it falls back to the principles of totalitarianism and how dictators and so on have operated down through the centuries. I mean, it's know what your people are doing and find the ones who are not conforming to what you want them to do and then get rid of them. And that's fundamentally... That's fundamentally what this process does. It gives them that kind of knowledge about everyone in the country. And if you start to speak up about some issue or something, you get noticed, and then they have all that data already assembled on you, and they simply go compile it and look at it and see how they could influence you to do what they would conceive to be the right thing. So that's how you use it against people, and you make sure that they know that you know about what they've got. So then they fear you one way or the other, or will conform to your wishes, if they can't find anything on you specifically, but they can find something on someone you care about, then they'll use that against you. So it's just like this. That's standard KGB tactics also.
Well, and in terms of population control, I think what you're pointing out is they're trying to change the attitudes, values, behaviors, and beliefs of a target population to be more easily malleable and controlled by authority.
Actually, they don't have to do that. All they have to do is make sure that everybody knows what they're doing. Then people basically change their what they're doing. I mean, people I know have already changed how they operate, how they communicate internationally, Chris Hedges, who has said to me, he's finding it very difficult to investigate, do any investigative reporting anymore because he can't find any sources that will talk to him. And so they're not talking, so they're modifying their behavior, whereas they would used to talk to him about things off the record. Now they can't do that, or they don't do that because they're afraid of being monitored. And the existing government is threatening everybody with prosecution if they leak. For example, they still have 9 prosecutions pending on the Espionage Act from 1917 with, I think, 9 different people on, who have been whistleblowers, classic whistleblowers, and they're trying to silence that. And that's the way they threaten people. And so people internally in government have changed how they operate. They no longer are willing to talk to anybody that's a reporter. And so that's changing how we no longer have a free press that can interrogate and probe into government activities.
What would freedom look like in America if privacy was restored and the NSA was following the Constitution, for instance?
Well, you would actually be what the founders of this country envisioned as what it should be. That is, a country where people have the freedom to be creative and innovative without having the fear of being observed or disapproved of even before they can try to institute or start to implement an idea that they had. So that's how civilization advances. When you take away that freedom to feel like you can do anything here, the sky is the limit here, you aren't bounded by anything, then you take that away. Why? People withdraw like they did in East Germany or in the Soviet Union. They become very, very withdrawn, afraid to do anything because their next door neighbor or some other person would be spying on them and reporting them. And so they stagnate as a civilization. They become drunkards and, like they did in the Soviet Union, a lot of alcoholics in the Soviet Union because they were frustrated. They couldn't feel that they had the freedom to be creative and innovative. And that destroys, human aspirations, basically.
Are you optimistic about the future of freedom?
It's one of the main problems I see is that this way of doing bulk acquisition of information on the population is spreading through the democracies of the world. It's not a question of just creating it here in the U.S. I mean, we are spreading this around the world. I mean, the Five Eyes are using it, and it's spreading to some other countries. There are other cooperative efforts with third parties under a program called Rampart A, where they're starting to do the same kind of thing. And this kind of knowledge and information about the population is being used by law enforcement through the MLAT mutual law enforcement agreements and treaties. And it's being used worldwide. So the people cooperating, other law enforcement agencies around the world that cooperate with the FBI or the DEA, they will get information from the NSA indirectly and never be told it's coming from that, but they can act on that. And then when they do, they have to do their own, they have to create their own what they call parallel construction to create information that's admissible in a court. Since the NSA data wasn't collected with a warrant, it can't be admitted in court. So it's inadmissible. So they have to do a parallel construction then, which means go find the kind of implicating information that would give probable cause to do what you're doing, arresting them, and do it through normal policing procedures. Then we'll use that data in court, substitute for the NSA data, so they perjure themselves there in court. And I call that a planned program perjury policy run by the Department of Justice of the United States. And now they're spreading it around the world. So they're subverting our judicial system inside this country also. And they're not just doing it here. They're spreading it around the world. So Well, you know, we all need to be concerned about this around the world, not just here in the United States. We may have started it, but off the model of the Soviet Union and the Stasi, I might add, and but we're spreading it, and that's even more criminal in my mind.
Bill, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a small town in central western Pennsylvania, up in the hills, up in the Appalachia Hills. So I'm a genuine hillbilly, so to speak.
What value was placed on honesty, hard work, integrity, and character in your upbringing?
Well, in this town, I mean, you know, it was only 2,800, 3,200 people at the time. I think it's down to 2,800. at the time, you know, everybody basically knew everybody else. So what you were was what constituted your character. And so everything you did reflected on the character of person you were. And that's how people knew you in the town. So everything, all the values, the decency and all on that people treated each other with were all part of that growing up. And people cared for one another there. They looked after each other, so they were the basic values of humanity. So,
well, they're the basic values of community. You were brought up around honest people in rural Pennsylvania, and then you moved to D.C. and you got a job in government. Did you find out that your ideas growing up were somewhat naive compared to how things are?
Well, actually, not initially, anyway. So, I mean, the first 28 or 30 years I was in government, I was of course working the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact, that what at the time was the highest priority problem and the highest priority threat that we perceived as a country. So basically anything I always treated people the same way I did. I was treated when I grew up. So I was always also working on the most important problems in the place, so I didn't really recognize any change in that, because people really return the kinds of what you project to people, they kind of project back to you. So I didn't perceive of anything at that point to do anything. Besides, everybody in the country and in the NSA wanted me to continue doing what I was doing because I was kind of successful at it. So they liked the outcome, gave clear knowledge of what the potential foes were doing. So they wanted that to continue. It was only in the later part of my career there, from about 1995 on, when I started getting involved with contracting and the shift from the problem that I had been working Soviet Union and so on, that I got into areas where people were getting lots of money in contracts, and so solving problems in that arena was also my objective, because that was the main problem that we were facing, was the digital explosion at the time. So that got me directly into the solving problems that nobody really wanted solved there. And so when I did that kind of caused reactions that I didn't think I would get. I thought people would adopt those solutions and run with them and try to improve on them if they could, which was an expectation that I was clearly disappointed at, because no one really wanted to do that. In fact, they still don't, because again, they're still building their empire with different fear-mongering topics. The latest, of course, is cybersecurity and so on. So,
well, and problem solving is a way of finding truth. So my question would be, what value does philosophy have in your life, and how would you define truth?
You could say there's a variation of truth depending on who's looking at it, but there's also a physical truth, and that physical truth is or is not. So there's kind of the, when you look at, for example, when you're doing signals intelligence, you're looking at abstract things, the communications of people and their metadata and other kinds of things that they're saying. You may not be able to read their things, so they may be encrypted and you can't read that. So you have to try to interpret that. But underlying all of that is a physical reality that's happening. Now, either that physical reality is happening or it's not, and that's the truth of it. So what you're trying to do in the business of intelligence anyway is get to that underlying truth, the physical reality. And it's not to something like for example, in 1968, the Russians invaded Czechoslovakia. That's a basic fundamental truth. That happened, and it's not open to interpretation. We've got the pictures from Life magazine, you know, and we had all the intelligence of them and everything going in. So it wasn't something it was the basic bottom truth. And that's the kind of thing you try to get to, reliable physics of things that are going on. And basically things that no one would dispute, I would say.
How would you define freedom?
Freedom is, I would say, is when an individual feels that they have the opportunity to try and do anything they want to do. That's kind of the freedom, without hurting people.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Mother of the poor Richfield man sails across the sea of years.
Of course, you know, you have to have limitations. You can't You don't want to do things that will hurt other people, but you have the freedom to be creative and innovative in your own way, in your life, and take it wherever you want to take it.
What's the relationship between freedom and truth? Bringing it together, you know, you actually go out and find truth. There's a relationship between freedom and truth, and when truth is lost, freedom does what?
The problem is when you lose truth, you get into realms of deception and manipulation, and that is what destroys freedom. I mean, you can't really say you're free if you're being manipulated and being given false information to make judgments on. So it's you're fundamentally in the form of an electorate. You're an uninformed electorate or a disinformed electorate. So you lose your freedoms at that point.
You made sacrifices in order to do the right thing in a hard situation where other people were being dishonest. The cost is so high. How do you justify the sacrificing of your career to do some truth-telling?
That's pretty easy to me. I mean, I look at it as a very simple thing. This is the founding principles of this country, which I thought were really great, and I devoted my entire life to protecting and ensuring that would continue. And the oath of office is to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And now the real threat, the only threat we really faced were really domestically. We have done to ourselves fundamentally what the terrorists wanted done but could never achieve. We have done to ourselves. And this is the domestic threat that our constitutional and the oath of office that we took was given to prevent. I mean, this is the only way no other country in the world could have done to us what we have done to ourselves. And so this is the time when all good Americans need to stand up and oppose this.
What is signals intelligence, and how did you get into analyzing data that comes from signals intelligence?
I got into the signals intelligence business in the Army when I got out of school in 65. They were drafting people for the Army, and, you know, people in my neck of the woods, hillbillies were good shots with a gun, so you were always a bunch of hunters up there, so you ended up in everybody I knew at the time was ending up in a rifle company being sent in the front lines to Vietnam to be able to kill people. So that was something I didn't want to do. I didn't particularly care to kill anybody. I mean, I didn't even like hunting that much, so I stopped when I was 16. I would never consider wanting to kill somebody as something I really wanted to do, so I wanted to avoid that anyway. I could, so I checked my options with the recruiters, and they said, well, hey, if instead of being drafted for 2 years, you volunteer for four, we can give you your choice of assignment. You get your own, you get a career, you can go a different route. You don't have to be in the rifle companies, but you have to sign up for 4 years. So I did that, and they sent me to intelligence school, traffic analytics school in Fort Devens, Massachusetts. And that got me, and that was in the signals intelligence. That was the Army Security Agency, which is one of the branches of the CSS, of NSA-CSS. It's NSA Combined Security Services.
The American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, Our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.